everyone. My name is Eden Richardson. Thank you so much for tuning in to the sermon we have today. We're so excited for what God is going to do in and through your life as you listen. Please be sure to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel for all future messages. Thank you so much, and we cannot wait to see what God is going to do in and through your life.
We are super excited about our new playground. My favorite part of the playground is the solid surface. It is so clean and neat, and we are just in love with it.
My favorite part about the playground is the big tunnel. My favorite part about the playground is the slides.
My favorite part about the playground is the climbing wall.
My favorite part of the playground is the slide.
My favorite part of the playground is the slide.
We're thankful that the playground is installed, and through your generosity, we're able to pay cash for that. It's a first-class playground, much larger than the one we had before, and really thankful to have that. Back in January, our renovations team shared an update with the church, and we talked about some of the projects that we were doing now and paying cash for, as well as some we wanted to do in the days to come. Playground is one of those. We've also replaced the lighting in this room with LED lighting. And so the flickering is gone. There's still some work to be done with the technical side of communicating to the board and all of that, but the lights are installed. We've replaced the boiler, so in the wintertime we have heat. And the phone system in the office building, which is almost 20 years old, is being replaced now. And the fire panel, which you will never see, but if we ever need it, we'll be glad we have it. That's coming in the very near future. And starting next Sunday morning, for the next several weeks, our church leadership, the renovation team, stewardship committee leadership, and others are going to be sharing with you each Sunday morning an update on what we're looking at and what we're thinking about doing. Those updates will be done on Sunday morning. Why? Because that's when we're all here. And I'm going to give them about 5 minutes of preaching time. We're going to do it now. Why? Because you're all in the room. And this is the best time to do it. And we want you to know what's going on. The renovation team has been communicating with the church leadership council and with our deacons in their monthly meetings. In fact, for the past few months, there's been a thorough discussion in our deacons meetings each month about all that's happening. And we wanted to share with you. Now, let me remind us of our goals. What are the needs? What are the goals? What are we trying to accomplish with all of this? The first thing is just updating, refreshing phase one. It was in March of 2004, 22 years ago, we moved to this campus and to this building, the education building over here. So it needs some updating, some refreshment. That's what the projects we've already mentioned are about. But some other things we'll be doing as part of construction going forward is new carpet, painting, updating the restrooms. And to all the sisters in the room, we know that we need more restroom space for the sisters. So that is one of the goals. That's on the agenda. Let's see if we can double your capacity, okay? Go ahead. I know that makes a bunch of you happy. That's one of the goals. The crowding out in the lobby, some Sundays especially. We don't really have a lobby. We have a large hallway. So we're looking to address that, but not just to have more space for transition on Sundays, but places for you to hang out and talk, because we love each other. We like each other and want to hang out and talk and fellowship and connect and build relationships. Well, you need a place to do that. You need space and time to do that, right? So that's one of the things we're looking at, is how do we address that need. Our senior adult life groups, Sunday school groups. I just walked in a moment ago because I was out here talking to one of them as you all were singing. We have some senior adult classes on the third floor. We would love to get all of our senior adult classes on this level so they don't have to use the elevator or go up and down any stairs. That's one of our goals. Another goal is going out that direction to have dedicated parking for handicapped and senior adults. It won't really shorten their walk, but it would mean they don't have to walk across the two driveways. They'd have dedicated space. They could walk straight in, designing the patio and everything to get rid of trip hazards, to just make it safe and easier for them to get into the main level and go to life group and worship. That's part of our, that's on our agenda. B45, our fourth and fifth grade ministry, we call it the Bridge. B45, as you know, meets in this corner up here on the third floor in what were some adult classrooms and what was the projection room back in this corner they meet in, and every now and then I get to hear them having fun up there. That's okay. We need dedicated space for them and more space because it's growing and we need room for them, so that's on the agenda. We need more classrooms for our adult life groups. Now, our traditional service that meets at 9:45, we've got room to create new classes. This service and our 8:30 service are two contemporary services. You all go to life groups in the middle hour, right? 9:45, the middle hour. We don't have classrooms to start any new classes for you. That limits our growth. That's a problem. So how do we create more adult classroom space? And then equally important is having all of our preschool children and elementary children in a location where access is secure. Right now, our preschool is secure access except for two nursery rooms over here. We want to get them downstairs with the rest of the preschool and also redesign things so that our elementary. This is just the time we live in, right? So we want that space to be secure, limited access. So that's on the agenda. Now, how are we addressing all these needs? Two things. One, making changes to this campus as is. Okay? Updating it, but also reusing space. A bigger part of how we're addressing this is with new construction, an additional building to our campus, a connection center, and a three-story education building. So think of it like this. You go out into our lobby and you see the glass going out toward Dave Lyle. You with me? Give me something, church. You with me? So imagine you just keep going that direction. And there's a two-story building. It's actually open at the top with decorative banners, but it's open all the way up. So if you're on the third floor, you can look over and look down into a large connection center, which gives us plenty of space for transition, but also hangout space for you to sit or stand and talk to people. Plenty of room for coffee stations, for our welcome ministry, and other things that we need to do. So we're not talking about just enlarging the hallway. We're talking about building a large connection center out there. If you want a sense of how big, when you go out, you'll see some yellow flags in the grass beyond the patio. It's not exact, but that's an approximation of what we're looking at building for the connection center. That's how far out it would go. And then all the way up. So it's a large, large building. And then if you can imagine looking this direction, okay, toward the creek, toward our three-story education building. You know, our preschoolers downstairs, choir room, kitchen, this level, adult classes. If you take that connection center and you go that direction, three-story education building, the bottom would be dedicated space for the B45 ministry. So it'd be on the same level as the elementary preschool, elementary, B45, all on the same level. That would be a great win for us. On this level, classrooms for senior adults, and then for other uses at other times. Off the connection center. On the third level, another hallway going, and just additional adult classes. So that's just kind of an overview of what we're looking at. We have been working. We've already selected the architect. We've already selected the contractor. We've been working with them together. How do we do this well? How do we do it? Not cut corners, but, you know, cost effective, but get what we need. Now, hear me. Nothing has been finalized. We will not build anything until the church votes. One of the reasons we're giving these updates over the next several weeks is to inform you on all that we're looking at. But the church will vote before we move forward with construction drawings and building anything. So I do need to tell you that we have moved from the conception phase to the design phase. And so there's a lot of going back and forth right now, and we're looking at very specific designs for new construction as well as modifications to the existing campus to address all of these needs. And that includes looking at costs. And so over these weekly updates, you're going to get a better picture of what I just described. Next week, you're going to see on the screen renderings of the footprint so you can get a sense of where everything is. We're going to share with you what we're looking at, what it's looking at financially, and how we might pay for this. Now, our goal is in a couple of months to be ready for the church to vote on moving forward. That's the goal. So you need to be on the lookout for sometime in May to have a business meeting. Now it may be June. We don't know, but our hope is to be able to do this in May. To have a Sunday night business meeting when some information will be presented and it'll be discussed. We would not vote that Sunday night. The vote on moving forward would be the following Sunday morning by secret ballot. That's how we do things here. Because we want everybody to have a chance to share their opinion in a business meeting, but then to vote by secret ballot. So that's the goal. The goal is also, and we're being aggressive, and the contractor and the architect know this. They're working with us. We're being aggressive. Our goal is to break ground this fall. If the church approves moving forward with the project, we would break ground this fall with a 12 to 14 month build period. So these weekly updates, like I'm doing now, it won't be me in the weeks to come. It'll be other leaders of these teams and stuff. If you miss a Sunday, you will not miss the update. All you got to do is go to our website or YouTube channel and watch one of the live streams, and it'll jump ahead to the sermon, and it'll always be at the start of the sermon. We'll also have a designated place on our website that you can go to and find it just by itself and listen to the update each week so you can be as informed as possible. Now, since we shared an update, Mike Gaines did a great job back in January. Many of you have been praying. I ask you to continue praying. I just told the senior adult class one of the things I wanted them to pray for is a good dirt. That out front, we'll be doing the borings in a couple of weeks. Pray for good dirt, because good dirt that's good for us financially. Bad dirt, not good for us financially. So pray for good dirt, okay? Really important. Practical. Money involved. Pray for good dirt. What did I say pray for? If it's bad dirt, pray for God to do a miracle and change it right now. But also keep praying and give. You can be giving to the building fund now. We have money. We've paid cash at this point. We have money set aside to help with this, but not enough to pay for it. But the more we give before we finalize all this, then the less we'll ever have to think about borrowing. We're going to have to borrow some, but the more we can give now, the less we'll borrow then. So when you can give to the building fund right now. I encourage you to start doing that. Monisa and I are giving every month. We've been doing that. There are many in this church who've been giving for a long time. You can start, if you're not, to give to the building fund weekly, monthly, however you choose to do that. So pray and give. All right. Does this all make sense? Yeah. All right. So next week you'll hear from Mike Gettings and maybe Mike Baker and some others, and I'll preach. So you ready for the sermon? John chapter 4. See if I can get you out of here in the next 25 minutes. Are y'all optimistic? Yeah, come on. John chapter 4. You'll remember that this year our theme is loving people the way God wants us to love them, the way He defines it. And we just spent several weeks talking about how to love our family well. Starting today and through up to Easter, we want to talk about how to love the lost, how to love people who don't know Jesus, how to love people that if they died today, they would go to hell, not heaven. And all of us have people we care about who are in that situation. So how do you love them well? John chapter 4, Jesus models for us doing this. In this story, He's traveling with His disciples from Judea in the south to Galilee in the north. And to get there, they have to pass through the region known as Samaria. He's tired, stops, sits down by a well to rest while His disciples go into a small Samaritan village to buy food. As He sits there, a Samaritan woman comes to draw water, and He starts talking to her, which really surprises her because, one, she's a woman and He's a man, and it was unusual for men to talk to women that weren't their wives out in public like that in their culture. But secondly, she's a Samaritan and He's a Jew, and Jews did not like Samaritans. In fact, Jews were bigoted towards Samaritans. Looked down on them. So here's this Jewish man talking to her, a Samaritan woman, and that really just surprises her. Their conversation becomes personal, and we learn that she's been married 5 times previously and currently is living with a man that she's not married to. She's living in sin. Jesus explains to her he's the Messiah, the one that everybody's been looking for, coming to save them. She believes. She's transformed. She's so excited about this Jesus, she runs into the village and begins telling everybody, including men, about Jesus. So they come out to the well to meet him. Meanwhile, his disciples return from buying food in the village as Jesus is finishing this conversation with the Samaritan woman, and they are shocked that he's talking to her. In response to their shock, Jesus says something. What he says in John 4, starting at verse 35, is this. Do you not say there are yet 4 months and then comes the harvest? He said, y'all are used to saying, you know, it's 3 months, 4 months, 5 months before the harvest is ready to collect. He continues. Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and look. Look on the fields, that they are white for harvest. Already, right now, already he who reaps is receiving wages or a paycheck and is gathering fruit for life eternal, so that he who sows and he who reaps may rejoice together. You in this case, for in this case the saying is true. One sows and another reaps. Jesus uses the grain or wheat harvest, a farming analogy, if you will, as a metaphor for seeing a lot of people come to faith in Jesus, a lot of people be saved and born again at one time. And he's saying to you and me that if we want to see people saved, we want to see a lot of people come to know Jesus, we need to listen to what he just said and learn from what he just did. For he is modeling for us how to love lost people. And one of the things he's teaching us is that he's encouraging us to have harvest awareness. Jesus said, lift up your eyes and look. Look at those fields. Why did Jesus say, lift up your eyes? Because many of us have harvest blindness. Seldom looking at the field, seldom seeing the people around us at work and the ball games and the grocery stores who are lost and going to hell who don't know Christ. We don't look at the field. We don't look at the harvest. And Jesus says, lift up your eyes. You ever seen someone walking around, not looking where they're going because they're just looking down at their smartphone or they're looking down at something else in their hand? You ever seen, and they just walk around and they bump into people and they bump into things and they don't see anything around them. They just, you know, see their feet and whatever's in their hand. You go to a restaurant and you see people sitting at a table, friends, co-workers, a family, and neither of them are looking at each other. They're not talking to each other. They're just looking down. They won't even lift up their eyes to see who they're eating with, to engage a conversation, who they're eating with. It's easy for us to go through life like that. To go through life just looking down at what occupies us, what consumes us, what's it, you know, and not seeing the opportunities that God is putting all around us. I had two experiences this week, one positive, one negative. I was at Food Line and saw a woman I'd not seen in years. And we started talking. Conversation moved to spiritual things, and I invited her to church. I was at Home Depot later that week, met a total stranger. We spent 5 minutes talking about basketball. Never said anything about Jesus, never said anything about church. I didn't even think about the harvest until I walked away, and it was too late. In one of those moments, I saw the harvest, and the other, I did not. You see, lifting up our eyes to see the harvest is a choice, is an intentional act. That's why we encourage you to pray those three prayers that we talk about a lot every day. Start your day, start your morning with these three prayers. God, today, give me opportunities to invite someone to church. Give me opportunities to say something to someone about you. And God, give me some courage and boldness. The eyes to see so that when those opportunities are there, I will speak. God, give me some courage. Give me some boldness, God. And then to have a list of people, names that you pray for every day, people you care about, classmates, co-workers. But they're not saved. They don't know Jesus. They're not following Jesus, and you're praying for them every day. And here's the thing. You will learn if you pray every day those kind of prayers, God will start working in your life. And we're to care enough, we're to have awareness enough for God to do those things, for us to pray for God to do those things in our lives. Open up your eyes. Lift up your eyes and look. Have awareness. The second thing is this. Jesus recognizes the harvest urgency. Harvest urgency. In verse 35, he said, you all like to say that in 4 months the harvest is coming, but I tell you, you need to start looking because it's white. The harvest is white. Some old translations say it's ripe. That's a bad translation. The Greek word means white or bright. Jesus is saying, you think you have plenty of time, but you don't. Time is actually short. In fact, it's shorter than you think. This word white is leukos in the Greek. We get our word leukemia from it. A cancerous disease that starts in the bone marrow where bad white blood cells drive out or push out the good blood cells. What color is wheat? When it's growing, before it ripens, it's green. When it's ripe, it's a golden brown. When does wheat become white? When it's getting close to rotting. When it's on the verge of being over-ripened, or it's been waterlogged because of a lot of rain, and if you don't get it in quickly, it's not going to be any good. The point Jesus is making is you think you've got 3 months, 4 months, 3 years, 5 years. But if you get out in the field and start looking, you'll find there's some that's already been ripe, but because you've not been working in the field, it's almost to the point of being beyond ripe. We don't have as much time as we think. I've been thinking a lot about my high school classmates because our 50th reunion is coming up in June. That'll make you feel really young. Monice and I are going. So I've been, you know, talking to some classmates and stuff. And Eddie, we were good friends, and he played basketball, but he didn't know Jesus. He wasn't a believer. And when I was a senior in high school, Eddie started attending our church on Sunday mornings. And he came every week. And I can still remember our pastor taking me aside and talking to me. And this is not verbatim because I don't remember his exact words, but the gist of what he was telling me was, Steve, you need to take Eddie and you need to share the gospel with him and, you know, tell him how to be saved because he you know, the Holy Spirit's working in his life. He's coming to church, meaning he's interested and he's ready, but that won't last forever. So I waited. Didn't talk to him. After several weeks, Eddie stopped attending church. We graduated, lost contact, lost touch. You know how all you high schoolers say, oh, we're going to be in touch forever? No, you won't. Relationships are about geography. There may be one or two or three you keep in touch with, but you won't. So you just need to know now's your best opportunity to influence any friends you have in high school. When you're in college, that's the best opportunity you have to be an influence, a witness to those friends. We lost touch. I saw Eddie once. I was back in Kentucky in December years ago I went to a basketball game to watch my nephew play basketball. And Eddie was there because his son was playing on the other team. So we talked for a little bit. I'm so thankful that years later there were some other followers of Jesus who did what I did not do, and they spoke to Eddie, and he gave his life to Jesus and even preached a little bit. And I'm really thankful for that, because this past summer Eddie was playing golf and had a massive heart attack and dropped dead there on the golf course. You don't have forever. We need to have a sense of urgency. We don't have as long as we think or as many opportunities as we hope. The third thing is Jesus promises harvest rewards. Verse 36, he said, already, listen, it's already happening right now. The one who's reaping, and to reap, you got to get in the field. You can't reap from the couch. You got to get out in the field. Is receiving wages. That word means a paycheck. When you're in the field working, you're sharing the gospel, you're inviting people to church, you're praying for lost people, when you're talking to people, there are rewards and blessings that come right away. And one of the blessings is, if you keep doing that and you do it enough, you're going to see some people saved. He said, he said, gathering fruit for life eternal. You're going to see some people transformed. And then he said, the one who sows and the one who reaps rejoicing together. There's joy. In fact, there's no greater joy than knowing that God used you to bring somebody to faith in Christ. You're not the only one he used, but you're one of the ones he used. It's a great joy. And that leads me to the fourth thing. Jesus explains the harvest work. In verse 37, he said, this saying is true. One sows and another reaps. That's how farming works. You have to plant before you can harvest. If you don't plant, there will be no harvest. If you don't sow seeds, there's nothing to reap. And if we're out in the field working, there are going to be times I'm planting a seed. There are going to be times I'm harvesting, and I've seen both happen. But here's the thing, whether you're planting the seed or you're the one harvesting the fruit because they come to Christ in your presence, whichever it is, everybody who's involved in that is going to rejoice. And the truth is, most people who become followers of Jesus have multiple Christians who plant seeds of faith in their life. This week I was exchanging text messages late one afternoon with Evelyn, one of my classmates, lives in Florida. We were talking about the reunion and other things. I really encourage you to be praying for her. She's my age, but she's had serious health problems. She has to use one of those rolling walkers to get around now. She's had major issues. So pray for her. I've shared with you over the years, Evelyn was the person, when I was a sophomore in high school, invited me to church the first time I ever went to church. We were in geometry class, and she said, if you come to church, you can sit with me. She was pretty, so I went. And my life was changed. She told me about, in this text exchange this week, she told me about a time in her life years ago. She never shared this with me. We're good friends, have been ever since. She's one of the ones I stay in touch with. She was telling me about a time years ago when she was really discouraged, wondering if her life had counted for anything, if she had made a difference in anybody's life. She just wasn't feeling good about herself. Her kids were in high school. That'll do that to you sometimes. And she came home after work, and she got the mail out of the mailbox, and she was sitting on the steps of her front porch down in Orlando. I don't know why anybody wants to live in Orlando. It's too hot. But anyway, she was sitting on those steps, feeling bad, feeling down, just kind of looking through her mail. And some of you know this. Others of you don't. Years ago, our church used to send out a weekly newsletter by mail, when people actually, held paper in their hands and read it. We used to send out a weekly newsletter. It was called The Messenger. How many of y'all remember The Messenger? Yeah, boy. Been a while. Anyway, she picks up The Messenger, and because we're good friends, she'd always been on my mailing list, so she always got our weekly newsletter. And I had written in the newsletter that week, that particular week, my pastor's article was my testimony. And I told about the first time I went to church, and it was because Evelyn invited me. And in that article, one of the things I said was that anything God ever did in my life, anything God ever used me to accomplish, Evelyn played a part in it. And she told me this week, she sat there reading that, feeling down, and she cried like a baby. And isn't that just like God to know, I need to write that article so she'll get it on the very day she needs it. That's God. I could tell you other stories like that. God wants you to know that your life can matter, and nothing matters more than helping someone know Christ. That you can have the joy that comes from knowing that you made a difference. God used you. But you're going to have to lift up your eyes and start looking at the harvest and not just focused on me and mine. This, you got to lift up your eyes and see beyond yourself. See, Satan doesn't want you to do that. The culture doesn't want you to do that. The culture and Satan want you to get so wrapped up in me, you see no one else. And here's the thing, the more you get wrapped up in me, the more discouraged and depressed you become sometimes. You need to have a sense of urgency because the time matters. Pray those prayers for, you know, for opportunities and for boldness. Do your part. Plant seeds. Reap the harvest. Start talking to people. There was a famous preacher years ago, in preacher circles anyway, named Vance Havner. And he used to say, cut a Christian anywhere and he'll bleed evangelism. Listen to that again. Cut a preacher, cut a Christian anywhere, and he or she will bleed evangelism. Is that true? Is that true? This week, when I was at the grocery store, it was true. When I was at Home Depot, it was not true. Is it true of you? When was the last time you bled evangelism? But it can be true of us. We can change. You can't win everyone, but you can win someone. Will you start praying those three prayers every morning? God, give me opportunities. God, give me courage. And God, I'm praying for these people by name. Will you pray just a simple commitment? Will you pray those three prayers every morning? And by the way, in your D groups, you need to be talking about this and talking about who you invited to church and who you had an opportunity to share Jesus with and who you're praying for. Because if your D group's not doing that, you need to start doing that, because discipleship is not just Bible study. It is unbiblical to define discipleship as just Bible study. That's unbiblical. It's not true. Evangelism is part of discipleship. Last Sunday, many of you came to this platform and picked up Easter invite cards. Today, they are in the back of the room on either side on tables in front of those evangelism banners. Between now and Easter, will you stop back there every Sunday and pick up another invite card and invite someone to church on Easter Sunday? Brother Kevin has prepared out in the lobby and equipping center, and there are gospel tracts you can use in witnessing. They're always there. Stop there every Sunday and pick up a couple of gospel tracts or a handful and give them out to people. And by the way, if you leave a gospel tract at a restaurant as part of your tip, you better tip 25%. Do not ever leave a gospel tract for your white person and be stingy with your tip. You are being a terrible witness when you do that. Christians should be the most generous people in this community. And by the way, if they see you praying over your meal, leave a generous tip, or you give Jesus a bad name. Is that clear enough? All right. Get you some gospel tracts. I want y'all to make Kevin work this week, because you take every gospel tract in that thing and he has to replenish the whole thing this week. Open up your eyes and see people in the grocery store, Lowe's, Home Depot, the ball game, school, the park. Start talking. When we sing this song, the Holy Spirit has said something to your mind, to your heart, to your soul. Not only hear it and feel it, but respond to it. Do something, because he's talking to you right now. Come to this altar. Get on this kneeling bench and pray for the harvest. Pray for yourself.